straight through. It's not too late. We have one more week in the series. And tomorrow's a holiday, so it's a great time for a gripping read of the book of Acts. And it is a gripping read. It's a really exciting story. Disclaimer, there are a couple of long, boring speeches, but you can kind of rush through those and get back to the action. It's a good book. All right, so today we're going to look at one of the particularly exciting and scary stories that come near the end of the book of Acts. But let me say up front, I know that we have a few lovely, sensitive souls, particularly in kindergarten and first grade, who don't like scary stories. And I know that because they tell it to me pretty much every week in Cedar Ridge Kids. So let me say for their benefit, just as in a series of unfortunate events, actually at the end, everything kind of works out okay. So the big story of Acts is that God is working things out. So there are a few a little bit scary things in our story today, but don't worry, God wins at the end. Sorry to break the dramatic tension for everyone else, but I don't want to worry some of our younger people. So let's turn to the story. Now, rather than reading it out of the Bible, because it's quite a long story, I thought we could act it out. So to do that, I'm going to need some volunteers. And I also want to make sure that the kids can see. So if there are any kids at the back, if you want to come forward, there's lots of empty seats. Oh, wow, there's nobody on this front row. So you can come and sit over here if you want to so that you can see. And so that maybe you can take part too. Really, you can see from there, guys? You don't want to come forward? Don't be shy, don't be shy. Okay, come on forward. Come sit over here. Or you can sit on the floor, but you have to sit at the sides, not in the middle. You're good there, sweetie. No, not in the middle. There we go. All right. So let me explain that this story is mainly set in a boat in the middle of the ocean. And this boat was a grain trading boat. It carried grain from Egypt, either barley or wheat or something like that, from Egypt to Italy, to the heart of the Roman Empire. And these boats were very big. They were about 100 to 140 feet long, which is longer than this room, actually. And they were about 30 feet wide. So this was a very, very big boat, and we wouldn't be able to fit it in here. So I've had to scale things back a little bit. Hey, hi. I've had to scale things back a little bit. So we're going to have to use our imagination and pretend this is a really huge boat. Okay, guys? So this is my boat, which is not an exact replica, I have to confess. Pretty close, but not an exact replica. I'm just going to put that down there. And on this boat were 276 people. Now, I'm not going to be able to fit that many people in my boat. So, again, we're going to have to use our imagination, scale things back a bit. And I'm going to have 4 people in my boat. And, oh, wow, volunteers already. You don't know what you're going to have to do if you get on my boat. The first person who's on this boat, spread this out a little bit because I'm going to need it later. The first person who's on this boat was a man called Paul. I need a reader. Sorry, sweetie. You want to be Paul? Okay, come here then. Paul was one of the early followers of Jesus, and he started a lot of churches in a number of different countries, but he got into big trouble for telling people. You can just stand here. Turn and face everybody. He got into a lot of trouble for telling people about Jesus. There were a lot of leaders who didn't like him doing that, and so they got him arrested as a trouble causer and imprisoned. So you're going to be a prisoner, okay? So let's find some things for you as a prisoner. Here's a prisoner's hat. Perfect fit. And we need something to stop you from running away, okay? So, this is really heavy. Oh, my goodness. I'm not sure I'm going to be okay with this, but come here. Let's fasten this onto you. It's really heavy, so I hope you turn around. There we go. I hope you'll be okay with that. Really? Oh. Wow! You're very strong. What did you have for breakfast? Nothing. Ooh, let's not say that. It's not a good ad for breakfast. Okay, well, anyway, it's working for you. So, yes, okay, you're very strong. So he was a prisoner, but he found out that there was a plot to have him assassinated, to kill him when he went to stand trial in Jerusalem. So now Paul was a Jewish man, but he was also a Roman citizen. So he used his right as a Roman citizen to appeal to Caesar, and instead of going to Jerusalem, where he was going to get killed, to go to Rome. So he was put on the boat. If you go around the back, it's smaller at the back, so you can climb in. He got on the boat under the guard of a Roman centurion called... Can you climb in?
Yeah.
Roman centurion called Julius and a bunch of soldiers. So I need a Roman centurion and I need a... Come on then, two at the back. A Roman centurion. I have two at the back. You can maybe be next. All right, who wants to be the centurion? Here we go. Now, a centurion, that means you have at least 100 soldiers. You were not just a centurion. You were also a member of the Imperial Guard. So you were a very fancy soldier. So you can get on board if you go around the back. No touching. You're a prisoner. And we'll, you can be a Roman soldier. Now, this is very, very sharp, okay? So don't be very careful with that. It's very sharp. There you go. You can... go and get on board. Okay. And now we need someone to sail the ship, right? We need a ship's captain.
I do.
Do you have to read anything? No, you don't. You want to be the ship's captain? Oh, we've got two volunteers. All right, we need two more people. So come here. Actually, you're going to be a volunteer in 1, 2, 3, 4 in just a moment. Okay, sit with your mom because I have a special role for you, and it's a nice outfit, so you'll like that one. You're going to be the ship's captain, so you can have a sailor's hat. Now, I'm not going to give you anything to carry because you're going to have to do a lot of work. Okay, so go on up onto the boat. Okay, so on our boat we've got Paul, the prisoner, and there would have been a whole bunch of other prisoners too. We'll have to imagine them. We have Julius, the Roman centurion, and all his soldiers. Yes, you can wave, that's fine. And we have the ship's captain, and there would have been a whole bunch of sailors. There were also some passengers, including Luke, who's telling us this story. But I think the boat's full enough, so we'll just imagine them. And Luke doesn't really do anything very interesting in this story. So, okay, now we're joining the story after Paul and Julius and the rest of them have been at sea for quite some time, and it's not going very well. So the wind's not blowing in the right direction, and they end up at a port town called Fair Havens. Now, Paul has been on a lot of boats before. You can see he's quite used to boats. He's in his element there. And he tells the captain, and he tells Julius, that it's too late in the year to keep sailing, that they really should stay at Fair Havens and wait for the spring to go to Rome. But the ship's captain has got a lot of grain. Can you pick this up? It's very heavy, okay, because it's full of grain. Can you, very heavy. Okay, well, what did you have for breakfast?
I had eggs and bacon.
Eggs and bacon. Oh, well, then, there you go. So hold it up. So he's got a lot of grain on board, and the grain's very valuable, and he's not sure it's going to last until the spring. So he convinces Julius, you can put it down, that they should keep sailing. So off they go, and at first, everything's going well. There's a nice breeze, and so they put up the sail. Hold that. There we go. Nice breeze. But then, disaster strikes. A hurricane wind comes. It starts to blow and lashes against the boat. So they put down the sail, because the mast is very wobbly there anyway. So they put down the sail, and the waves are lashing against it, and everybody's thinking, oh no, what's going to happen? And they start to feel sick. Maybe they're sick over the side of the boat a little bit. You can act that out if you want. You be sick? No, there we go. And then they hear a terrible noise, this awful sound that's very quiet, but it starts to grow. It's the creaking of timbers. That means that the wind and the waves are making the wood of the ship come apart. But these are good sailors, they know what to do. So, Captain, you can come here. They threaded ropes under the ship and then tied them together. Now, they would have had ropes all along the length of the ship, but since we only have one sailor and he might get tired, we'll just do the one rope. That's it. Can you tie it in a knot? And that will hold the ship together. But still, the wind is blowing and the waves are crashing very quietly. And they've been tossed to and fro. There we go. The wind's picking up again. And it's really scary. It's really scary. And it rages all night. Luke says that the boat took a violent battering. So they got no sleep. Everybody's up all night. They're still feeling very sick. Feeling belly sick. There we go. Paul's feeling very sick too. There we go. Very good. And then in the morning, the captain realizes that he needs to make the ship lighter. So he says that we need to throw out all of the luggage. No, not yet. The luggage. The one on the end. There we go. Yep, throw it out. It's okay. Teddy bears can swim. It's fine. Okay, so they throw out all the luggage to lighten the ship, and they expect the storm to calm down. But by the third day, it's still raging, and the wind is still blowing. The waves are still crashing. And the ship's captain says, we've got to still lighten the ship even more. So now we're going to throw over all of the tools and the tackle and the... Yes? No, not the, no, none of those. All of this stuff, all the stuff that they... And this is really serious, right? Because the sailors need all these things to survive, but they're throwing them out because it's getting really serious to try and lighten the ship. Well, the weather was so bad that they didn't see the sun or stars for many days, so they got no idea where they were. Things were looking really desperate. In fact, Luke, the writer, says, we gave up all hope of being saved. And by this time, nobody's eaten anything. Everybody's still really sick. Everybody's really tired. They're having a really hard time. And Paul says, turn around and read it in a loud voice. I told you so. Thanks, Paul. Never one to pass up an opportunity to tell people he was right, so that's really great. But he also said, don't worry. Even though you didn't listen to me, and you really should have, you will survive. Because God sent an angel to me and told me that I would make it to Rome, and all the rest of you would be spared too. And so the ship, though, is going down, and we're going to be shipwrecked, and we're going to end up on an island, but nobody's going to die, so stop worrying. So it's kind of a good news, bad news thing there, really, I think. So after 2 weeks straight of this terrible storm that's still blowing and the waves crashing, the sailors realize that they must be getting somewhere close to land. So they decide to drop an anchor. Have you got an anchor under there? Throw out the anchor. They threw out the anchor. And they threw it a bit further than crash into the boat. All right, they threw out the anchor. And they prayed for morning because they realized that they must, if they were close to land, there were probably rocks out there and they could crash into the rocks and the ship would get all broken and they would sink. And so they prayed for morning. In the middle of the night, though, the sailors started to panic, and they did something very sneaky. They pretended that they were trying to fix something on the boat, but actually, they started to lower down the lifeboat. Can you lower the lifeboat? Over the side, because they decided that they would escape. They lowered it down. It might not have looked exactly like this, but something like this. They lowered the lifeboat to escape and to leave everybody else on the doomed and sinking ship. What a cowardly thing to do. But Paul spotted them, and he said, in a very loud voice, if I can open the paper, turn around.
Stop!
And he said to Julius, if they escape, then everybody's going to die. So Julius told his soldiers to go and cut the ropes, and he gave them some scissors because the sword was too sharp, and they cut the rope. Can you? Oh, no, we've cut the wrong rope. Now the ship's going to fall apart. Oh, no! Can you cut this rope? All right, there we go. Well, close to morning, Paul gathered everybody around him. Even though he's only a prisoner, he's acting like he's in charge now. He gathers everybody around him, and he tells them in a loud, loud voice, he says,
"Eat something.
Eat something. You've not eaten anything for 2 weeks, and you're really hungry, so you need to eat something." No, we don't eat the grain. That's okay. Eat something. You've got bread. Awesome. Well found. Eat something because you're going to need strength for the journey. So he took the bread. Woo! Turn around. Gosh. No improvising. No room for that. So he took the bread and he thanked God for it. Very good. And he broke it into 4 pieces. And then after asking if any of the people on board had food allergies... Do they?
Sensitivities.
Can you eat bread or not? Otherwise, just pretend, okay? If you can't, just pretend. Okay? Little side direction then. He gave them the food and told them to eat. He said, you need food for the journey. You need the strength to survive. So they all ate as much as they wanted. And then they threw off everything else that was on the ship, including the precious grain. Wow, you just tossed it aside like that. Such a heavy thing. Threw it all off to lighten the ship. Well, eventually morning came, and in the morning they realized that they'd got no idea where they were, but they could see a sandy beach ahead of them. So they put up the sail. Can you put up the sail? Sailor, come on. They put up the sail, and they made for the beach. But disaster struck again. They hit a sandbar, and the ship started to fall apart. Oh, no. Okay. Wait. Don't get carried away. Oh, my goodness. All right, we can put that down. And they thought, the soldiers thought, oh, no, the prisoners are going to escape. And so, I think I've lost my note. Oh, no, I've got it. And so the soldiers decided that they would kill the prisoners. But before they could, Julia shouted,
"Stop!"
Thank you. Stop, because he didn't want Paul to get hurt, because he realized Paul was a very special person. So Julius said, look, if you can swim, swim to the beach. And if you can't, grab a piece of the boat and float to the beach. So off you go, everybody. So as the ship was falling apart, they swam or floated onto the beach. And Paul was right. Everybody made it there safely. Oh, we're not done. Plenty more yet. When they landed, they found they were on an island that was full of friendly people. So I need a friendly person. A friendly islander. Now, this wasn't actually Hawaii, so they might not have been wearing Lays. In fact, it was an island called Malta. Can you hold that? Whoa. They were very friendly. And they realized that these people, the passengers, the sailors, the prisoners, the guards, they were all very, very cold because they'd come out of the ocean. And so they built... Thank you, sweetheart. You can sit on the island now if you want. So they built a fire. Okay, so this is the dangerous bit. I asked Mark to switch off the sprinklers, but you're going to have to move back, okay? Because they built a fire. Move back. It's very, very dangerous. It is a real... Yeah, of course. It's really hot. Okay, so they built a fire. I've got an appreciative person here. I'm going to get you to volunteer more often. Now, Paul did not burn his prisoner hat. Paul, come here, Paul. Was not one to sit around the fire, right? He likes to keep busy, so he went to get some sticks, some wood for the fire. But as he put the wood onto the fire, can you drop it? A snake came out of the wood and bit him. Now, the islanders thought, wow, this must be a really bad person. He nearly died in a shipwreck. And now when he makes it to shore, a snake bites him, a deadly snake. Now he's going to swell up and die. And they sat and watched him to see if he'd die. How are you feeling? bit, a bit puffy, hot or anything. No, in fact, he was fine. He shook the snake off and he was perfectly fine. And so then the islanders realized, okay, he's not a bad person. He didn't play with the snake. He's not a bad person. In fact, he must be a really special person, a really good person. And so they invited everybody to stay on the island until spring, when they could go to Rome. And that is the end of our story. It's not the end of my message. Don't get excited. But it is a good time to give a round of applause to our actors. Thanks, guys. Can you put the stuff back in the box? You put the stuff back in the box, okay? Thank you. Good job, guys. Way to go. Awesome. All right. So what, well, first of all, was that an exciting story or what?
It was,
wasn't it? It was an exciting story. I think it was an exciting story. Good story. Okay. What can we learn from that story? Well, I think there's a lot we can learn, but I'm just going to talk about, very briefly, three things that we can learn. I think we have them on a slide. One, life is an adventure. Two, God can be trusted. And three, we're never alone. So pretty basic and simple things to remember. So first, life is an adventure. There's a quote by a writer called Frederick Buchner that tends to get put onto Facebook pretty much constantly, but with different photos behind it. But I think it's great. I think it's a really good quote. Here is the world. Beautiful and terrible things will happen. Don't be afraid. I think it's true. Beautiful things and terrible things do happen in life. Now, hopefully, none of us will be in a shipwreck or nearly killed by a soldier with a sword, or even bitten by a snake. Hopefully that won't happen to us. But scary and sad stuff does happen. It happens to all of us. People get sick. People die. People we love hurt us. We have problems at school. We lose our jobs. Lots of sad and scary things do happen in life. And I think we have two choices. We can embrace life with all its ups and downs, all its beauty and its terror, or we can struggle against it. And Paul had that choice. He could have focused on all the bad things that happened to him. Now, Paul had lots of adventures. This is just one of his adventures. But look at the things that happened. He was arrested. They tried to kill him. He was in a storm on the ocean for 2 weeks. He was almost killed by the soldiers. He was shipwrecked. He was bitten by a snake. That is a series of unfortunate events, right? I mean, that is a bad day. That is not a good time. But then again, we could look at it from the other perspective of a lot of good things actually happened to Paul. So the plot to assassinate Paul was foiled. God sent an angel to tell Paul that he was going to be okay. Julius protected Paul so he wasn't killed by the soldiers. Everyone survived. The islanders were friendly, and the snake didn't actually hurt Paul. So lots of good things also happened. So this could have been told as a sad story about how everything always seemed to go wrong for Paul, how all the forces of nature and of man were trying to get at him. But Luke, who writes this story, and Paul seem to think that this is actually a good story, a happy story, a story that's exciting and good because it shows that nothing can stop the good news about Jesus. Paul, in this story, doesn't sit at the bottom of the boat crying and saying, I want to go home, it's not fair. Instead, Paul stands up, he speaks bravely, he takes charge of the situation, and he trusts that God is with him. And I think this can be a challenge for us, too. What story will we tell ourselves? That everything and everyone is against us, or that God is for us? That life's not fair, or that life's a gift and an adventure? Someone I love very much gets very sad sometimes, like we all do. But one day when she was particularly sad, she saw this poster on a wall, and it helped her to change the way she was feeling. On the darkest days when I feel inadequate, unloved, and unworthy, I remember whose daughter I am, and I straighten my crown. What will we focus on, the positive or the negative, in this political environment? Will we focus on the positive or the negative? In our work situation, in our family situations, at school, will we choose the positive or the negative? Will we choose hope, or will we give in to despair? Now, Paul had not always had a positive approach to this adventure that is life. When we first meet Paul in chapter 7 of Acts, He's a very angry man. He's someone who felt very defensive of his way of life, who felt that people who believed in Jesus were a threat to his religion and to his way of life. And he was very angry and very violent. But here in chapter 27, where we read today's story, we see him acting with an almost reckless confidence and hope in God. And the reason for this change was that Paul met Jesus. And the story of how Paul met Jesus is told in great detail three times in the book of Acts, because it was that important to Paul. Now, at Cedar Ridge, we don't really talk about meeting Jesus. Some of us maybe can point to some experience in our life where we had a dramatic change, where we thought one way and then we had an experience of God, or an experience that later we realized might have been God, and things really changed for us. We maybe have an experience like that, but many more of us probably think more in terms of a journey of slowly understanding more about Jesus and getting to know Jesus through God's Spirit within us, changing us slowly over time. And in fact, Paul never tells people to meet Jesus in a dramatic way like he did. He tells them to believe in Jesus, to trust Jesus, and to follow Jesus. And that's what we're instructed to do too. And Paul's relationship with Jesus resulted in Paul thinking that shipwrecks didn't really matter that much. This was actually Paul's fourth shipwreck, which is amazing, right? And on one of those shipwrecks, he was stranded on a piece of wood floating adrift for a whole day and a whole night. If I was in one shipwreck, one slight, almost shipwreck, I would probably never get on a boat again. But for Paul, it didn't really matter as long as he could tell people about the hope he had in Jesus. And it wasn't just shipwrecks. He was also in prison a whole bunch of times. He was beaten up a whole bunch of times, in riots and so on. But it didn't matter as long as he could tell people about the hope he had in Jesus. Now, that's not to say that Paul didn't get afraid. He did. Several times in the book of Acts, God reassures Paul and tells him not to be afraid. And we saw in that story, too, that God sent an angel to tell him that everything would be okay. But even though he was afraid, Paul trusted God and chose hope and confidence in God rather than his fear and defensiveness of his former life. And that brings me to my second point. God can be trusted. Paul knew that God can bring good out of any situation. He wrote to the people, the believers in the city of Rome, and he wrote these words in a letter to them. And we know that in all things God works for the good of those who love him, who have been called according to his purpose. God can bring good out of any situation. But Paul also knew that scary and sad and frightening things could and would happen to him. As we saw in this story, lots of bad things actually happened to Paul, lots of dangerous and scary things. They were kind of funny in our story, but I'm sure they weren't funny to live through. I'm sure they were really scary and horrible and just very unpleasant to live through. And yet, Paul trusted God. In fact, Paul knew that things wouldn't end well for him. We don't know for sure. Our story ended on a nice note of the islanders were kind and they stayed there until the spring. But it's tradition holds, we don't know for certain, but there's evidence that supports that after he eventually arrived in Rome, 2 years later, Paul was executed. So things did not work out well for Paul. And Paul didn't expect them to work out well, and yet he trusted God. Why? Well, I think Paul would have agreed with that quote that we saw earlier about living in a world where beautiful and terrible things happen. We live in an amazing world, a complex, beautiful, awesome, just miraculous world. But it's also, in some ways, a world that's broken and needy and scary and dangerous. It's a world where people make mistakes. We don't hear too many of Paul's mistakes in the book of Acts because he's kind of the hero of the story. Although there are one or two things in there that you can say, oh, I don't think he did right there. But for sure, he made mistakes. Other people in the story made mistakes. The Jewish leaders that were trying to kill him, that was a deliberate bad mistake. I think there were some innocent mistakes. I think the sailors deciding to keep sailing, even though it was late in the year, was probably a well-intentioned but bad choice. But lots of things happen that don't seem to be the result of anybody's choice. They're just part of living in a world that's beautiful and terrible at the same time. And Luke, the way he tells this story, really brings out that tension between God being trustworthy and in some ways in control, ultimately in control, knowing what will happen, God using events to work out God's purposes, And at the same time, the feeling that in this story, anything could happen. The story gets us involved. It draws us in. Again, maybe not so much the way we acted it out here, but when you read it in Acts, it's a very intense story. It's very tense. There are lots of twists of fate, as it were. You don't know how it's going to end. But at the same time, you also don't feel like it's just random, right? I mean, Paul's not just fumbling around in the dark. God tells Paul what's going to happen, at least partially, what will happen and why. There's a purpose to it. And Luke doesn't really try and reconcile this tension between God's sovereignty and God's trustworthiness on one hand and human action and the risk of living in this world on the other hand. This is a tension that is kind of played out in the story. And I think that's true to life. I don't think we get a nice rational argument for why things happen. I think we live with this tension. To the extent that it's resolved at all, it's resolved through living. So Paul did not meet Jesus, and then everything went great for him for the rest of his life. Quite the opposite. Paul was saved through shipwrecks. Paul was saved through nearly getting killed by the soldiers. Paul was saved through getting bitten by a deadly snake. Paul was saved through clinging to pieces of a broken ship in the middle of the ocean. And I think that's how we're all saved. I don't think we have a charm life by following Jesus where nothing bad happens, but rather we're saved through the wrecks and the misfortunes and the failures of our lives. God brings us safely through. God can be trusted to bring us safely through. And a third point, we are never alone. One of the reasons that Paul could be so confident in God's trustworthiness is that he knew God was always with him. As we discussed, Paul met Jesus, but that wasn't the only time he interacted with God. As we've talked about in some other weeks, between all these action stories, there's lots of time where people are waiting on God, where they're praying and waiting for what God has to say. And we saw in this story how God spoke to Paul and gave him a dream to tell him that he would be okay, that God was with him and hadn't forgotten him. And Paul knew that. He wrote again in his letter to the Romans, "For I am convinced that neither death nor life, neither angels nor demons, neither the present nor the future, nor any powers, neither height nor depth, nor anything else in all creation will be able to separate us from the love of God that is in Christ Jesus our Lord." Even in prison, even chained up, God is there. Even in a sinking ship, God is there. Even on a deserted island, God is there. In those dark and scary places, in those places where we feel confused or lost or even abandoned, God is there. And God wasn't just there for Paul, but God also provided other people, companions, friends for Paul. People that would travel with him. Luke traveled with him. Luke, who we think wrote this story or is traditionally associated with writing the book of Acts. And another guy called Aristarchus, who nearly got killed for being friends with Paul in a riot in Ephesus. But he continued to stay with Paul and to accompany him and ended up being a prisoner with him in Rome. And in addition, when Paul eventually landed in Italy and started on the road to Rome, people from Rome came out to meet him, to walk with him along the path. They came from as far as a town called Three Taverns, or Three Stores, which historians say is about 33 miles away. So they walked a long way to come and be with Paul and to walk with him and to support him. These were people that he'd never met, he'd written to, but never met, that wanted to be there for him. It was never Paul just on his own. It wasn't Paul and God take on the world. There were people there for Paul every step of the way. For all Paul's strength of character, for all his confidence, for all his faith in God, for even his arrogance, he still knew he couldn't make it on his own. He needed the strength and the comfort of his friends. He wrote to the church in Galatians these words, "Carry each other's burdens, and in this way you will fulfill the law of Christ." Like Paul, we know we're not alone. God is with us. And we also know that God has given us a community of other believers that we can lean on and we can support. So maybe today and this week we can look for ways in which we can support one another and carry each other's burdens. And like Paul, we're invited to partner with God on an adventure to make Jesus known, to help others see that we can have hope even in the storms of life. We're going to take communion now. And when we take communion, when we take bread and wine, or as in our case, gluten-free crackers and juice, we usually think of Jesus' last meal with his disciples. But today we're also going to think about the bread that Paul broke on the boat. He thanked God for it, and then he gave it to the people and said, "Be brave, eat up, because this bread will give you strength." In fact, literally it says, "This bread will give you the strength to be saved. This will give you strength to make it through your journey." The bread and the wine, when we take them at communion, represent to us Jesus, Jesus' life, Jesus' body, that he gave to us to give us strength, to give us strength for all the storms that we might have in our lives right now. And it's bread that we share together as a community, as we carry one another's burdens, and as we remind one another of the hope we have in Jesus. So let's pray together the prayer that's on the screens.